Our guest today is Roger Dyer, author of Green and Gold Memories. Coincidentally, on a weekend, the Packers wear blue and gold throwback jerseys. We'll also provide a Packers-Chargers preview. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for a game this upcoming weekend against the San Diego Chargers. It's throwback weekend. But to kick off the show, we have a guest joining us on the phone.
Interview,
or I should say had on the phone. This is a pre-recorded interview, but we talked to Roger Dyer, author of Green and Gold Memories, growing up in Vince Lombardi's Green Bay. You'll find out all about it. Listen in and enjoy. Right now, we welcome onto the show Roger Dyer, author of Green and Gold Memories, Growing Up in Vince Lombardi's Green Bay. Mr. Dyer, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Brian. How are you this Friday morning?
Very good, very good. We're glad to have you joining us. Mr. Dyer, the reason we're having you on right now, the timing aspect, is because your book was just recently released, and we'll get into the contents in a moment. But what's it been like for this project for you to come full circle and get the finished product in your hands?
Well, it's a long process to write a book, as you may know. I started the book in January of 2014, kind of nibbled at it, and when it started to take shape in the spring of this year, I went full bore, and every weekend this summer was a green and gold weekend. as it has come to completion, it's gone through a couple edits from a couple different people. It started to take shape, and I'm really pleased with the way it's turned out.
Well, I'm excited to get into it. So Green and Gold Memories, growing up in Vince Lombardi's Green Bay. I take it this is a memoir of sorts then.
Yeah, yes it is. My father was a member of the Green Bay Bobcats, a semi-professional hockey team that began operations in the winter of 1958 and 59. That's how we got to Green Bay. I was only 3 years old when we arrived here. And, of course, Lombardi arrived the following year and began his rapid ascent and taking the Packers along with him. And so the book essentially covers early Lombardi years right up until 1972, 73, when I leave town for as a young adult to stake my claim in the world. So there's a lot of Packers in it. There's some Green Bay Bobcats in it, and there are a lot of tales that occurred when hanging around with some friends, some very good friends like Joe and Greg Lemron and Danny Telcher and folks like that. So you'll meet them all, and there's a lot of great Lombardi stories in here that have never been heard before.
Now just for background, I'm familiar with the Green Bay Bobcats, but not extensively. Are they kind of a semi-pro team, or how was that work back then?
Well, I'll just tell you from my dad's perspective. I think my dad made $50 a game, all mm-hmm. right, and back in the early '60s, that was. A pretty good paycheck for doing something you wanted to do. So my dad played full time for the Bobcats for 5 years, and family lore has it that the money that he made playing hockey, my parents put in the bank, and they used that to build the house in 1963. So all the players got paid. John Mesich, who was the finest American-born hockey player during his era, and may still be, told me it wasn't so much as a paycheck. It was kind of like a stipend, because a lot of these guys had to miss work on Friday, you know, to travel to Rochester, Minnesota, or Des Moines, or St. Paul, or wherever they played. So, but the Bobcats did real well. In 1960, they played three Olympic teams in the run-up to the 1960 Olympics at Squaw Valley, California. They beat the Japanese national team 10-4. They beat the West German Olympic team 8-7. And the United States Olympic team at the time was undefeated. But they came into Green Bay, and the Bobcats beat them 6-2. And Mesich later joined that team and helped lead them to a gold medal.
Very interesting, very interesting. Well, to get back on to the Packers here and to your childhood, because that's kind of what the book is about. We hear so much about the exploits on the football field, but can you share a moment from the book of Vince Lombardi or some of the players interacting in the community?
Well, you know, there was, when we were kids, there was only one way to get an autograph from a Packer, and that was to, you know, hang outside the practice field and hope somebody would scribble their name when he came by. We adopted a more enterprising way. We had a network of friends in our neighborhood, and when somebody saw what they perceived to be a Packer go in and out of a house or an apartment complex, well, we would go scout that place out, and if indeed they didn't live there, on autumn evenings we would go over to their house and knock on their door and ask for their autograph. And
rather brazen like.
Yeah, really, very, very brazen. Yeah. So, well, one night we knocked on Bob Long's door. Bob was a wide receiver that played. I think came to the Packers in '64 or '65. And super fast. He was a basketball player up until his senior year in college. And I think the Packers currently have a couple defensive backs that were football was not their primary sport. But anyway, we knocked on his door, and a young lady answered, and we asked if Bob Long lived there. She said, yes, he does. And she invited us to come in, and Long had just had knee surgery, and him and his friend were having KFC on TV trays, and they were watching something. And they invited us, Bob invited us in, offered to have dinner with them. And of course, we were 10 years old. We were just too much in shock to even contemplate it. But he gave us his autograph. He was very nice to us. So that was, you know, that was one event. Boyd Dowler lived maybe a quarter mile from my house. He lived right near Perkins Park, which is on the west side of town. Mm-hmm. And him and his family lived there year round. And you could walk by Dowler's house and see him mowing the lawn, every once in a while. And we went and knocked on his door one night. And I don't think he was very pleased to see us, but he didn't say much. But he signed his autograph. And I remember looking down at his feet, and man, his feet were just huge. Just huge feat for a big man. And you know, he had a great career in Green Bay. Just a fabulous, fabulous receiver. Very good hands, and just enjoyed watching all those guys. And that was the beauty of growing up in this Lombardi's Green Bay, because all the players lived among us. You know, there were not exorbitant salaries the way they are today. Some of these players, they live in kind of mini mansions or in secluded neighborhoods that you can't get to. Green Bay was very middle class, and their homes were just like my home. And, and that's why it was so darn much fun to live in Green Bay at the time, because when we watched our neighbors on television on the weekend, they truly were our guys. They were our team. And, you know, Lombardi's personality was so dominant. I mean, we always heard rumors and stories or sightings about Lombardi. I got him. I overheard my dad talking to his friends about it. So, you know, he was kind of an omnipresent figure in town. And when you consider he coached there 9 years, he had an 89-29-4 record. It's better than a 75% winning percentage. His first year was the first winning season the Packers had since 1947.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long drought. They went 7-5. Next year, they went 8-4. They played the NFL championship against the Eagles. Lost the close game. Probably should have won that game. Lombardi told his team after that game, "You'll never lose another playoff game." And they never did.
Hmm.
But between 1961 and 1967, they were NFL champions 5 out of 7 years. A dominant era. No team has ever been that dominant as Lombardi's Packers were. And given today's rules, I don't think any team ever will be again to win it all five championships in 7 years.
Yeah, just amazing. We're talking to Roger Dyer, author of Green and Gold Memories, growing up in Vince Lombardi's Green Bay here on Railbird Central. Mr. Dyer, kind of a hypothetical question here, but how do you think your life would be different if Vince Lombardi never became the Packers coach?
Oh, you know, I think we still would have followed the Packers, but you know, I felt Lombardi growing up in Green Bay when he was a coach. The Ice Bowl. I got a long chapter on the Ice Bowl. I interviewed Chuck Mercini 2 or 3 times for this book. And he took me inside Bart Starr's huddle. He took me inside Vince Lombardi's locker room, places I never thought I'd be.
Mm-hmm.
But during the Ice Bowl, I have 2 younger brothers. And, you know, after the Cowboys went ahead in the first play of the fourth quarter, my younger brothers were just crying. They were stupid Packers. They're not going to win. And I had complete faith that they would win.
Yep.
And of course, that last march into history, that final drive, 68 yards with 4:52 left on the clock, wind chills minus 48 degrees. You know, there's been other great drives in NFL history, but in those conditions, with what was on the line, it was the greatest drive in the history of the league.
Mm-hmm. Can you kind of go into Chuck Mercine's claim to fame? I think that's kind of just such a interesting part of Packers lore, and he's a big part of your book.
Yes, he is. You know, I think every guy who has played football in high school or sometime in his life who sits in the stadium and watches the Packers or watches them on television has a little mini fantasy about playing. What would it be like to play for the team? To come out of obscurity and put the uniform on and do well in the game. Chuck Mercine was kind of like that. He was drafted in 1965. He was the 31st pick overall, drafted by the New York Giants. And Ali Sherman, Tucker Fredrickson, was the number one pick in the draft, mm-hmm. He was picked by the Giants. And it didn't really work out for Chuck in New York. And in 1967, Ali Sherman cut him twice. Chuck had did a little place kicking in college. He bought him back week 4 or 5 of the Giants season and told him if he missed a kick, he was gonna cut him again. Of course, he missed 1 or 2 kicks when he got the call back. So he was he got cut again, and he was disappointed. But he still wanted to play, so he went and played for a semi-pro team in New York, called the Westchester Bulls. And he had known Otto Graham a little bit. Chuck had played for him in the 1965 College All-Star Game. So he gave Otto a call and said he's done with the Giants. He didn't want to play for Ali Sherman again. And Otto said, well, why don't you come on down here and take a physical. If you pass it, we'll sign you the contract. So to shorten a long story, that weekend, the Packers played the Baltimore Colts, their fiercest rival in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And on consecutive series, they lost Elijah Pitts and Jim Grabowski, their starting backfield, with season-ending injury.
Yep.
So Lombardi was bemoaning this fact, talking to Wellington Mara, who was a college chum of his. And well, Mara told him, I think Chuck Marcin is talking to Washington. You want me to give him a call? So, no. And Lombardi said, sure. So Mara got the two guys together. And Marcin came to Green Bay. And and he knew one thing Marcin raves about is how welcoming all the players were. You know, all the famous stars of the Packers, you know, after Lombardi introduced them, came up to him and said, we're happier here. If you need any help, let us know. You can help us. You can help us win. So in the Ice Bowl, Chuck wasn't even supposed to start. Grabowski had worked his way back into some sort of health, and he had injured himself in the warmups. And Lombardi tapped him on the shoulder before the game and said, you're starting. And so, you know, on the final drive, with a 68-yard drive, and Chuck carried the ball, touched the ball three times. The two runs were for first downs, and of course that first and 10 on the 30, that little swing pass when he outruns Dave Edwards down the sideline to put him in a position to win. I mean, they were just. I don't think anybody, especially if you're a Packer fan, you can't watch that final drive and feel something lift inside of you. It was a fantastic, fantastic journey into history. And so, you know, Marcin has gotten fat off that drive ever since. But he's but he's a wonderful guy, a great guy, and. Marcin's exit is really was really kind of nasty, and I go into that. It involved Phil Bengston raided my brother's place, which was a hangout of the players on the east side of Green Bay. Mm-hmm. And Marcin was in there, and it was not even late. There was no curfew,
mm-hmm.
but Bengston asked him what he was doing there, and was having a drink, can I buy one? And Bengston did not want one of his players buying him a drink. So a few weeks later, Bengston cut him unceremoniously, and that's all detailed. And so Marcin in the spring of 69 was playing golf at Wingfoot in New York. And coming up to the next tee was Vince Lombardi. So I went over to say hello to him, and Lombardi says, geez, you look in good shape. Come and see me after your round's over. So he went, Lombardi was in the clubhouse, and he said, how would you like to come play for my team, Washington? And Marcin was still playing for the Packers at the time. And, and Lombardi said, you know, Green Bay won't talk to me. Everybody's mad at me over there because I left. But if you can somehow get out of that contract, I got a place for you on my team. So. It all worked out for Marcin, and I think both of those men, as diverse backgrounds as they had one thing in common, and they had complete self belief in who they were, and they were fate joined them, and three in a row, and it's never been done before, and I don't think it'll ever be done again.
Very cool story. Now, Mr. Dyer, you'll have copies of the book on hand this weekend at Throwback Weekend, an event we've promoted on the show a lot in the past. But can you kind of provide details about what's going on?
Well, the book was released on October 6th and was made available on Amazon. And the book sold so well and so fast. That they ran out of books, and I talked to the publisher today. They're getting ready to print more copies. So if you go to Green and Gold Memories on Amazon, they'll say not available, but just keep checking it, and it will be available this weekend or on Monday at the latest. So you'll be able to get a copy if you're not going to be able to make it a Throwback Weekend.
Okay.
But I'll be at the Green Bay Distillery. It's on Mike McCarthy Way, from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock on Saturday night. And I've got a good number of books. I'd love to run out, but I don't think I will. The book sells for $19.95. I'll autograph it, and I'll talk Packers football with you. My youngest brother Paul is going to be there, and he goes back to Throwback Weekend every year. He lives in St. Paul, so I'd be happy. Some of your listeners are in the area Saturday night. The Green Bay Distillery, Mike McCarthy Way, from 7 to 9 o'clock.
Very good. We'll send people your way. And of course, for Throwback Weekend, it's thrown on the occasion of the Packers-Chargers game this week, and they're wearing the throwback jerseys. Before we let you go, how do you see this weekend's game playing out?
Well, the Packers are 5-0, as you know, mm-hmm. and they seem to have better balance on both sides of the ball. I know the offense has been a little skittish and sketchy mm-hmm. throughout this year. I attribute that to injuries and the loss of Jordan Nelson, but the defense thus far has played pretty well. I think the Packers' schedule, I think their toughest competition is going to come in November and December. And this is their last game before the bye, and I think they're gonna go into the bye 6-0. Mm-hmm. If you want me to take a stab at a score, I'll say 31-20. Minnesota beat them up pretty bad. Beat up San Diego pretty bad a few weeks ago, and especially the quarterback Philip Rivers. So if the Packer pass rush can get to Rivers, I think that's the key for victory.
Very good. Well, sounds good to me. I like the prediction, and well, thank you very much, Mr. Dyer, for joining us on the show. We appreciate you talking to you, and like I said, we're going to send people your way.
All right, Brian, I appreciate it, and enjoy the game this weekend.
All right, sounds good. Take care. All right.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks to Roger Dyer for joining us on the show this morning. Please go and check out his book online at Amazon, Green and Gold Memories, Growing Up in Vince Lombardi's Green Bay. And like he just said, there will be copies available at the Green Bay Distillery this weekend on Friday evening prior to the Packers-Chargers game the next day. Saturday evening. Saturday evening. But thanks to Roger Dyer for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as I provide my two cents and kind of build off what Roger was talking about with the preview of the Packers-Chargers game. And what I'll do is I'll kind of give you one key on each side of the football, something to look forward to in this upcoming game. I think when the Packers are on offense, they've got to become more creative. And this is not an original idea of mine. This has been, you know, thrown out by any number of news outlets out there, kind of going over the troubles the Packers had, especially last weekend against the St. Louis Rams, and in particular the use of Randall Cobb, how he was used almost exclusively in the slot. Of course, didn't line up in the backfield, as it has been such a boon to the Packers on several occasions when they've trotted him out there, or Ty Montgomery in the backfield for that matter, against the Rams. Neither one was used there, nor was Cobb used as the receiver to one side either. Saying that didn't happen against the Rams, and you know the thinking is that the Packers wanted, you know, a running back in there that could provide pass protection because the Rams defensive line is just so good. You need a big guy like Eddie Lacy or James Starks in there. If Earl Donald busts through the line or, you know, Chris Long or Michael Brockers or Nick Fairley, whoever is providing a pass rush for the Rams, they're all so good. And that's why the Packers, you know, weren't as creative as they had been, you know, with guys like Randall Cobb, and Cobb, you know, has what, 3 receptions for 20 some yards, you know, basically his least productive game of the season. And, you know, having a shoulder injury probably doesn't help. But, you know, I think this is just a blip on the radar. This Packers team has kind of struggled on offense for the past 2 weeks, but it didn't the first week, 3 weeks of the season, really. And I think they're going to bust out, and I think they're only going to be helped if Davante Adams happens to return. I don't know if he will or not. But this Packers offense is not going to stay in the doldrums. It's going to bust out at some time, and I think this might be as good a time as any. You got the home field advantage. You don't have a Ram. You know, this Chargers defense isn't the Rams defense. You got Devontae Adams' return. All these factors combined, I think, are going to lead to a high-scoring game against the San Diego Chargers. And then if we flip it around, one key on the defensive side of the football, I'm not worried about the Packers' pass rush whatsoever. I think they're going to keep up their level of performance against this injured Chargers offensive line. That's really kind of the weakness of this Chargers team. So I think the Packers defense is going to tee off on Phillip Rivers, and they're going to get pressure on him. I think the bigger challenge is for the Packers secondary, because even though the Chargers have maybe a porous offensive line, or at least an injured offensive line that's leaving them devoid of talent, Phillip Rivers has a pretty solid, you know, set of weapons to choose from. In which he can distribute the ball to. I mean, you've got Keenan Allen. He's the rookie of the year two seasons ago. You've got Antonio Gates, one of the best tight ends in NFL history, maybe one past his prime, but one you're not going to sleep on either. You've got Malcolm Floyd, who's a decent wide receiver in his own right. You've got the up-and-coming tight end, Ladarius Green. And then you've got two guys coming out of the backfield, Danny Woodhead and Melvin Gordon. That's a pretty darn good group right there that can be pretty good with the football in their hands, receiving out of the backfield for the running backs and these tight ends and receivers on the perimeter. The Packers secondary's got to be up for this challenge, but the way the Packers cornerbacks have been playing, there's not a reason to think they're not going to be up to the challenge. Just happened to retweet, on social media yesterday from ProFootballFocus.com, their top 32 cornerbacks in the NFL. There's four Packers guys on one team among the top 32 cornerbacks in the NFL. I mean, how good is that? I mean, Sam Shields and Casey Hayward, the two veterans, the guys you expect to, you know, who have been battle tested and do well, they're holding up their end of the bargain. And then the two rookies, Demaryius Randle and Quentin Rollins, you know, playing up to expectations, I guess, you know, with the expectations of a first and second round draft pick, they're looking pretty darn good. I've been, you know, Quentin Rollins, of course, has the two interceptions last week, but Demaryius Randle just hardly allows any receptions his way. They've both been so good. I mean, this Packers secondary, and again, only going to improve if Morgan Burnett comes back from injury. So all these things combined, I think the Packers are in pretty good shape here. I've been predicting close games the past few weeks, and they haven't been, and maybe that's the kiss of death here, that I've been predicting close games, and now it finally will be, or something like that. I don't know. I've got the Packers winning 35-24, so 11 points here, which I think just beats the spread. It's rather amazing for, you know, people have been talking about the Packers' offensive inefficiency or their struggles the past 2 weeks. Despite the struggles, they're still beating the spread, which has, you know, been pretty big for an NFL game. So, Packers, I think, are going to continue to roll into the bye here. The big challenge will be after the bye when they take on an undefeated Denver Broncos team, but we'll wait to get to that when it comes down to that. But if we get into the next segment of the show,
Packers news of the day.
The big news that, now getting to 2 days ago here, but haven't gotten to address it yet, the Packers finally place safety Sean Richardson on injured reserve, officially ending his season. Head coach Mike McCarthy has not yet confirmed, however, that it's a career-ending injury, saying there's still tests to be done, but you have to imagine that's just a formality, having a herniated disc in his back for the second time in his career. And maybe they're just wanting to allow Sean Richardson to announce that himself, or maybe, you know, I'm sure they're still undergoing tests and things like that. This isn't something you take lightly, you know, when you're saying this series, they're going to have second opinions and things like that. But I can't imagine him, Sean Richardson, taking any chances anymore with the seriousness of this injury. You know, replacing Sean Richardson on the Packers 53-man roster has been tight end Justin Perillo, promoted from the practice squad, a guy who played briefly with the Packers last year. I think he appeared in all the two games and didn't catch a pass. I think he appeared on special teams. So I can't blame you if you don't even remember that. But he's been a guy who's been around now for 2 years and knows the Packers offense. And I think he'll get his chance this week, partially because the Packers are you know, have so many people dealing with injuries that, you know, they almost need him. And I don't know how extensively he'll be used on something like offense, but, you know, Justin Perillo will play, just probably a matter of how much. Speaking of injuries, that kind of leads us into the team's injury report. Good news this week is that guys like wide receiver Devontae Adams, safety Morgan Burnett, offensive lineman TJ Lang, all three of these guys who had been dealing with injuries have now practiced for two consecutive days and may be able to play in this game against the Chargers this weekend. You could argue that the Packers should, you know, kind of play it cautious and maybe with the bye coming up, give them the extra time to recover and not take any chances, especially with Adams and Burnett. These guys have already, you know, dealt with injury here, have aggravated injuries. But, you know, Mike McCarthy says if they're healthy to play, they'll play, and we'll find out. Meanwhile, linebacker Nick Perry and defensive lineman B.J. Raji haven't practiced at all, despite Mike McCarthy saying they're progressing better than expected. And kind of up in the air whether, well, Nick Perry probably isn't going to play. B.J. Raji, probably his status up in the air yet. And maybe it's more a case of with these guys, the Packers might err on the side of caution. But speaking of erring on the side of caution, Brian Bulaga and Randall Cobb were downgraded kind of curiously on the injury report on Thursday, going from full participants to limited participants in practice. And you might scratch your head at that, be like, these guys came back, you know, more than a week ago. Why are they, you know, being downgraded? And again, maybe it's just the Packers being safe here, you know, in terms of like cutting back on their workload. That I think that might be the reason more than anything, in terms of like, we're not going to take chances with these guys. These are some of the most important pieces of the puzzle. We're just going to keep them as healthy as possible and you know, let them kind of rest into Sunday's game. And they're going to play, but we're not going to, you know, tax them during the week of practice. We're gonna save them until Sunday. So probably nothing too big there. But that's what's happening in the world of the Green Bay Packers, and leads us into the final segment.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, today on Friday, we're waiting for that final injury report of the week. And, you know, it has the game day status projections, probable, questionable, doubtful, or out. And I think the one guy more than anybody else who's kind of up in the air this week might be B.J. Raji, who hasn't practiced, and you wondered, can he play without practicing? So we'll be waiting for that. But on top of that, which we've already gotten into the injury situation, the one cool thing this evening, the Packers are becoming involved. I'm not sure if sponsoring is the right word or not. I don't know how much, you know, money has been given to this exactly, but they're participating in the Tackle Cancer campaign, I guess, at a local high school football game on Friday night, which I think is really cool. Several Packers players will be appearing at the Bayport versus De Pere high school football game, Bayport, located in Suamico, a suburb of Green Bay, on Friday evening. So I think it's really cool for Packers players to get involved. And among the four players showing up is defensive lineman Mike Pinnell, a guy who battled cancer as a child, kidney cancer. So what better representative of the Packers than him to be at the game? He'll be joined by Micah High, Jaron Elliott, and Sam Barrington. In addition, there's going to be pink elements, just like an NFL game. There's going to be pink, you know, stenciled on the field, players wearing pink or on the goalposts. I'm not sure what all is going to happen, but there's going to be pink elements. There's going to be raffles for Packers gear at this game. So just really cool for the Packers to get involved at a local level, high school football game, making an appearance, you know, meeting players, meeting fans, meeting students. Just a good way for them to reach out and kind of a feel-good thing here on a Friday, 2 days before the Packers themselves take the field on Sunday against the San Diego Chargers. And with that, enjoy the game this weekend, folks. Hopefully we're talking about a 6-0 Packers team after this weekend. And we'll be back on Railbird Central on Monday to recap it all. So we'll talk to you then. The show airs every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, live Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. Podcasted and on demand later in the day. Before we go, my call to action as usual. If you've not done so already, please give us a rating on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. This podcast is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. If you could give us a rating and a review, we'd be extremely grateful. So thank you to those of you who have, and please, those of you who haven't, take a moment to do so. Shouldn't take long. But that's it. We'll see you later, folks. Have a good weekend. I leave you today with a song called Freaker by The Speaker by Keller Williams on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.
On the ground.